Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show, scotthorton.org, libertarianinstitute.org, and twitter.com/scotthortonshow. And hey, I'm doing questions and answers over at scotthorton.org/show, the old whole show feed. If you guys email me or tweet me questions, I've got answers for you over there. You know, more or less, I try my best. All right, introducing Dan McAdams. He runs the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And they got a hell of a lot of great articles over there by Dan and by Dr. Paul, of course, Adam Dick, and a bunch of other great writers that they print, reprint, and publish. Welcome back to the show, Dan. How are you, sir?
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah. Very happy to talk to you again. First of all, can you tell us real quick about this thing on April 8th where a bunch of anti-war libertarian types are going to be giving speeches?
Yeah, it's going to be a symposium on war and peace in the age of Trump. And believe it or not, it's going to be in that metropolis called Lake Jackson, Texas, Ron Paul's hometown. But it's the Mises Institute is the lead sponsor, and you can find out more about it at Mises.org/events, and that'll have a lot more detail. But we've got a lot of great speakers. Thomas Massey's going to be down here. David Stockman's going to be down here. Lou Rockwell, of course, Ron Paul. So we're all really looking forward to it. Love to see more people come down.
Cool. All right. Next thing. Doing some activism here. You got this Stop Funding Terrorists bill in the House, and I guess it's got the same name now, introduced by Rand Paul in the Senate. Is he trying to get me to like him? this might could work. Tell me what's going on with this thing now.
Yeah, I was on a show the other day. It was a more left-leaning show, and they, you know, wanted me to say something bad about Rand. And I said, first of all, he's my boss's son, so even if I felt something bad, I wouldn't. But second of all, he's doing some things that are pretty good, you know, trying to block John Bolton and being very, very out there and saying, no way. I think that's a pretty doggone good thing. And I think anytime, you know, teaming up with Tulsi Gabbard, teaming up with the left, making a beyond left-right coalition against this incredibly stupid war machine is always a good thing. So I'm really thrilled to see that he's introduced it in the Senate. It's a terrific bill.
Yeah. So what other kind of support do they have? Do you know any?
Well, you know, it's a broad coalition, certainly in the House. You know, they're Thomas Massey's on the bill. You know, Barbara Lee is on the bill. So it's the kind of thing we used to do when G.W. Bush was in office. So it's nice, you know, it would be nice to see the old left opposition to war start kicking in a little bit more. But, you know, I had read the bill when it came out, and I knew that it was a good bill, but I reread it before we started talking today. And I have to say, it is a very cleverly done bill. It's very, very interesting. The part that gets the most attention is that the U.S. government cannot fund any of these terrorist groups directly or indirectly, and that's all very interesting. But Section 2B is in my view even more interesting. It talks about any government that has provided the covered assistance, meaning the relevant assistance to these groups. No funds may be available to assist this government directly or indirectly. And the way I read this bill, certainly when you look at the behavior of Saudi Arabia and Yemen and elsewhere, this would have a definite effect on the relationship. And I would say even Turkey, with some of what Turkey's done regarding turning the other eye while ISIS was operating, selling oil and this and that. So it's actually a very interesting bill.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder about that. I mean, I sure like it. It's music to my ears, but I wonder if that's the problem with it, that maybe that's going too far and it'll serve as a poison pill where maybe if we could just get the CIA to back off a little bit. What good are the Saudis or the Turks without the CIA to run it anyway, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think, this is just my reading of it. Maybe, you know, maybe I'm extrapolating too much.
No, I think that's right. I've heard others characterize it that way, that that this has profound consequences for Saudi in it. And I'm thinking, well, I like that. Screw them. Good. But yeah. How are you going to get Congress to support something that's that good? You know, maybe it's too good.
Yeah, but when Dr. Paul introduced bills in the House, you know, we never had the expectation that they would pass. In a way, that's kind of irrelevant. They're useful as teaching tools. And I think that Representative Gabbard has gotten a lot of mileage out of this bill.
Yeah, that's
certainly
true. I think
she's done a very good job talking it up. And she's, I have to give credit to her staff because there must be some clever people she has working with her. I know that she's very clever. But it almost is sort of irrelevant if it passes because they can always wiggle around and weasel around it.
That's
but all of a sudden, it's opening up people's eyes. Hey, what? That sounds good. We shouldn't be funding terrorism.
Right.
So hats off. Very clever.
Well, you know, even if they passes the Boland Amendment and then Trump did a Reagan and went around it, well, now you got an Iran-Contra scandal, whatever.
Yeah.
So the Boland Amendment is worth pursuing, even though it didn't quite stick. And the thing is, here's my thing about this, Daniel, is that I think that this could pass. And I think that the reason why is because I think it could be framed possibly as here's that bill you wanted, Mr. President. It could be passed as the kind of thing that, you know, at least part of what Bannon has in mind. Now, Bannon wants to go to war against all jihadists everywhere, but hey, at least he wants to stop financing them directly. So maybe we could go ahead and, push that. That, you know, because Trump, I think you and I've talked about this before. 3 years ago, Trump tweeted, we shouldn't be backing these rebels in Syria. We don't know who they are, which means, yeah, we do. They're Al-Qaeda dudes. We should not be backing them, you know? So my think is that the Republican Party would support it if the president supported it. And the president might just support it if it could be delivered to him, you know, like, well, try to get Rand to say the right thing, but here he's doing the right thing. Maybe we could get him to say the right thing that, hey, Mr. Trump, here's that bill you wanted. You know, we're doing this for you. This is what you wanted. This is our policy now, right? Is that, you know, Islamic State is one thing, but at least when it comes to Damascus, we're no longer supporting rebels trying to overthrow Damascus, right, boss? Here, sign this. And then if he would say, yeah, then that would be worth however many tens of votes. Talk about it. Even if it didn't pass at that point, that would be even a bigger controversy at that point. If we could frame it right, try to.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. No, that definitely could be. This is what you want. And it would have the added benefit of wrong-footing the neocons. Because you remember Kimberly and Fred Kagan had a piece in the Wall Street Journal, I guess a week or so ago, saying we need to go back to square one and put together a Sunni army in Syria and get them started first on ISIS and then on Saud, basically going back to funding al-Qaeda again. So it would put them on the wrong foot as well. But, the Saudis have a lot of money to throw around in Washington. And, you know, but I think you could certainly be framed this way. And who knows? Paul Ryan would be the guy, I guess, who's going to put the kibosh on it.
Yeah.
There's certainly sort of lobbying things that could be done and should be done to raise awareness of this.
Mm.
I sure wish we could get Tulsi Gabbard on the show. We've been trying to get through to her because it would be great to be able to interview her and have her promoted in her own words.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been meaning to do that too, but putting it off. And, I wonder whether...
Good luck.
I wonder whether her experience on this has... been an education about her, at least previously, pretty bad views about Iran and some other things. Like, I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt here that she's on a little bit of a learning curve, but.
Yeah, that would be nice if some of the other things were tempered a little bit more. I agree. No one's perfect, but this is a good start.
Yeah, and hey, let's get real about why she's good on this. She's good on this because she was in the Iraq War, so she knows the first thing about it as opposed to everybody else in D.C. She's
exactly.
Like, well, wait a minute. I can tell one militia from another here, and these are guys that I don't want to fund, okay?
Yeah.
Simple as that. Everybody else is like, yeah, I heard Assad is the bad guy in this one. Yeah, as far as you know.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't know anything. But she was like, actually, I do know a little something from Adam when it comes to this, and it's enough to know better.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Tom Cotton went to the war and got dumber when he got out.
Yeah.
She went to the war and got a lot smarter when she got out.
Yeah,
so, all those
concussions, man, must have got to him. All right. Hey, listen, man. So let me ask you something. I've been trying to track down the best information I got on this, and you're right there among the best of people keeping track. So, and I think we talked about this before in one or another context. Last fall, right after Trump won, the Washington Post ran two stories about how Obama had gone ahead and told JSOC that basically, all right, we're going to go ahead. I'm very roughly paraphrasing here. Forget Hillary's policy. We're going to go ahead and go with Trump's policy now, and we're going to crack down on al-Nusra. JSOC, go ahead and hit al-Nusra. And but there was no mention of the CIA in there. And, you know, as we've talked about, as I know you know, and both of our audiences, I think, are pretty familiar with the fact that the military-backed Kurds and the CIA-backed jihadists have come to blows a couple of times in this war, and never mind the Badr Brigade from Iraq and stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so now there was a report in Reuters. It's the only thing that I know of since last fall, and I had originally missed this, but it came out in February 21st, it was. Exclusive CIA-backed aid for Syrian rebels frozen after Islamist attack. So what it says is al-Nusra sacked a bunch of stuff from whatever last little groups are still calling themselves the FSA there. I don't know. And stole their TOW missiles and a couple other things. So that what they're saying in the article, though, is that this is only temporary, and it's only because they got a bunch of their stuff stolen, and we just want to make sure that they can protect whatever stuff we're giving them. But we're not calling the mission off yet. And you shouldn't mistake this as a change in policy from Obama years to Trump years, that the policy continues and the CIA is still backing these rebels, at least overall, or at least means to continue to back them. But then I think, man, there must be other reporting about this that I don't know about from the last 4 or 5 months here. And I just wonder whether, you know, you're up on this and what is the status of the CIA efforts here. I mean, they'd have to be based in Turkey to be doing this anyway, right?
And it's a good question. And it is difficult to get information. And I'm always suspicious when I do get information. I wonder what the sources are and what they want. But I almost wonder if this was a precursor to a shift in Trump policy toward more U.S. direct military involvement in Syria. And that's just pure speculation, but it would make sense if your intention ultimately was to send a couple thousand U.S. troops, that you're going to want to cut off the pipeline to people who you know are unreliable, who you know may do things with the weapons that they shouldn't. And, you know, maybe that explains these two sort of seemingly unconnected but potentially linked events.
Mm. Yeah, in other words, once they're done with Raqqa, well, what are you going to do with all these Marines? Damascus is right over the hill, that kind of thing, huh?
I can't see them giving it back to Assad. You know, maybe they will. I would be awfully surprised. There are a lot of people who I respect that don't believe the U.S. wants to own it, but are they going to give it to the Kurds?
Yeah.
I don't think so. What are the Turks going to do then?
I know.
So what the heck do you do once you broke it? You bought it.
Well, you know, I was just talking about this exact question with Patrick Coburn an hour ago or something. And he was basically the same as you, going through the process of elimination. We can't just give it to the Kurds. That ain't going to last. That ain't going to work. And we don't want the Turks running through there, because that'll be a full war with the Kurds at that point. And so I guess there's Assad. But then, you know, even if there's a deal where Assad's regime takes back over Raqqa after the Islamic State is gone, that may be very difficult to enforce. I mean, they still got problems with the CIA-backed Nusra guys in Idlib province and this and that, right? So even if they agreed to that, I'm not sure it could stick.
Yeah, and you've got the Israelis who are getting pretty nervous.
Yeah,
you know.
Now talk more about that, because there have been some bombings, but not much news about the bombings there, Dan.
Well, I think, you know, and it's not me who thought of this. It's our and I can't pronounce his name, but my Indian analyst who runs the Indian Punchline website had a great piece about, he's a retired diplomat, about how the Israelis are feeling increasingly like they got the short end of the stick on this whole deal. They wanted regime change. They wanted to, you know, essentially have a very weakened Syria that they could bully around. But it looks like Iran is coming out on the top in these things, and that might explain Israel's behavior, its recent bombings around Palmyra, its bomb attack, the pretty aggressive threats from Defense Minister Lieberman, who says, if you dare lock onto our planes again while we're bombing you, we're going to take out your whole defense system. So that's a wild card factor. They have been de facto allies with Al Qaeda and ISIS in Syria in their desire for regime change. Maybe Bibi finally pushed it too far. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, it never made sense to me. I mean, I think they sort of backed off regime change relatively early, at least publicly. They started saying, I think even back in 2012 or 13, that, well, we'd rather see both sides hemorrhage to death and not see either side win and not necessarily see the fall of Damascus, but just see him weakened and all that. But of course, you know, the real goal behind all of that and weakening Syria is to weaken Hezbollah, right? And yet, all they did was give Hezbollah a big battlefield to practice on, which is what they're panicking about now, I guess. But now, instead of having Hezbollah last battle-hardened in 2006, you have Hezbollah battle-hardened 2011 or 12 through 2017. And so, I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I'm just assuming that they have not faced serious losses. They have gained incredible experience in this fight in Syria this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I wish the Israelis would listen to us and our non-interventionist views, because they probably would benefit and find themselves a lot more secure as well.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry. I know I kept you over here a little bit. I know you got to go. Thank you very much for coming back on the show, Dan. Great to talk to you again.
Thanks so much, Scott. Appreciate it.
All right, talk to you soon. Bye-bye. All right, y'all, that's the great Dan McAdams. He runs Ron Paul's Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And listen, I didn't say, they do the Liberty Report daily. It's a YouTube TV show. Dan and Ron Paul talking foreign policy daily, and it's so great. It really is. It's RonPaulLibertyReport.com. And I'm Scott Horton, and this is my show. Check out the archives at ScottHorton.org/interviews, LibertarianInstitute.org/ScottHortonShow. And follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Listen to the questions and answers. Send me your questions and answers, Scott@ScottHorton.org or on Twitter. And I will answer them at ScottHorton.org/show. And you guys can sign up for the whole show feed there as well if you want. Thanks. Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. Hey, Al Sky here for Rye Guys t-shirts. Rye Guys, that's WRYGuys.com. Great, irreverent, thought-provoking t-shirts upholding a pro-freedom perspective. Inspired by such classic humorists as Mark Twain, H.L. Mencken, and Oscar Wilde, they invoke the wit and wisdom of the past to satirize modern myths. These high-quality shirts for men and women look good and feel good, and they make great gifts. Use the coupon code SCOTT for 15% off. Rye Guys t-shirts at ryguys.com. That's WRYGuys.com.